Okay, looks like I'm on the air here.
Ay, ay, ay. How embarrassing.
Anyway, how's everybody doing there? A lot going on out here before the Ultra Sad Living until the start of the program here. Where have I been? Got a project in Parts Unknown over in... not allowed to really say where. But anyway, this is going to be our studio for the foreseeable future, which is good. I mean, I've been following the safety war here if you've been around for 4 years, right? We've been all four seasons. We've been improving. We've been learning. We've been communicating and everything else. And what happens? People want to work with you. That's a good thing. And let's go into, let's see here. A lot going on. That's all I have to say. Today was Earth Day. We had a lot of stuff going on with the program, outside the program, and everything else. So I'm going to be discussing today Our Leaders, book, Jay Allen, Safety in My Opinion. All right, a lot of information in here. Let's see, it's 330-plus pages here. We're going to be reading this stuff. We're going to be discussing this stuff regularly here. Did so far, so good. He did a very, very good job here with this book. It's available on Amazon. It's available in audio format also. Safety in My Opinion, it's part autobiography. Autobiography in the sense of his, he gets into some personal things and everything else. We're going to be discussing that. And we're just going to cut into the regular program. I'm trying to get my... and here we go. We're going to go with The Ballad of Jim Poulsel until we end from further south of the liberty of the border of liberty and prosperity and the highway to the north. Yes, we're near another highway to the north. So how's everybody doing out there? It's been a couple of days. We started a new project this week. To be honest with you, I was too tired to come on the air last night. So we wanted to go out there and, you know, rather than give it the old college try, like they used to say, what we are doing is, like I said, rather than the old college try, I said, you know what, I can't, you guys deserve the best program you can. Otherwise, it's a waste of your time, a waste of my time, and everything else out there. That's not what we want to do. So, what are we doing today? We're doing a lot of news, catching up on that news, all-important news cycle out there. Now, one of the recent programs had a story about, demography. And people are like, oh, well, why do you cover demography? Why is it important? Blah, 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 blah. So last night, I'm listening to the news. I don't normally listen to the news here. I really don't. You know, people are like, oh, well, you sound like you belong on, hold on. James, I'm on the air, and I got a good connection for a change. Okay, hold on. Okay, hold on. Hold on, everybody. We're going to go to commercial break here. Okay, hold on. Hold on, hold on. Okay, where did you send it? Hold on. Okay, it is G. It is G 277103. That's right. Sorry about that. Sorry about that, everybody. But stuff happens at home. But anyway, you know, people are like, Jim, we'll start over again with the demography. Why do you talk about demography? Demography is crazy. Why do that? And it's along the lines of, why am I getting echo? Now, you're talking about demography too much. You're talking demography. Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? It's an important thing. Demography is what the world runs on. Do you have enough people on the bottom of the population pyramid to support the top of the population pyramid? It's really simple. And with the, and it all comes out, and by the way, it's Earth Day today. We'll talk a little bit about that. So, why does that matter, Earth Day, right? And 1967, there was a book put out, The Population Bomb, by Paul Ehrlich. And essentially, it said, we're all going to die from overpopulation. Now, at the time, that's what the belief was. So you had countries that had high population problems, right? High birth rates and everything else. What were some of those? India was one. And as a matter of fact, when we had sent aid to India in 1967-68, was the Johnson administration, in that time frame, they put a stipulation in there that India had to do birth control stuff, right? Well, however, no, we were not going to go on to debate like that. And this overpopulation issue then got co-opted here in this country in 1973. Now you're going to say, okay, Jim, you're talking about abortion. Okay, we'll talk about abortion right now. I'm not going to give an opinion one way or the other, but I'm going to say what happened was in 73 when Roe versus Wade guaranteed the federal legal right to abortion. Then right, but it allowed restrictions because a lot of people never actually read this stuff. Why is it that I'm one of the only people that actually reads this stuff? I have no idea. And what ended up happening was, hold on, there we go. What ended up happening was birth rates started to decline. Then 18 years later, 1991, I was graduating college in 1992. I remember it was a big controversy. Where are all the students that we need? We had a huge drop off in students. Why? Because we had a lower birth rate starting in 1973. Now all of a sudden, 74 came around, lower birth rate. Now 1992, the year I graduated undergrad, what are we going to do? What ended up happening was a couple of things. One, they changed the SAT score SAT test majorly. They changed it to such a degree that at the time, I don't know if this is true today, but at the time, they did not accept that as an entrance exam into Mensa. Used it to be an acceptance exam into Mensa, or the high IQ club, depending on your score on the SAT. So some people say that they moved the needle down on that standard. I don't know, one way or another, I'm not That's not my area of expertise. But that was what was said. And then a couple of years later, they found people like me who were always told in undergraduate school, you know what, your grades really aren't good. You probably need to go into the workforce, not into graduate school. All of a sudden, they made programs available for us, continuing education programs available to go to graduate school. And I was fortunate enough to work for two companies that paid for graduate school for the most, in large part here. And now I'm benefiting from that today. I mean, best decision I made. I didn't make a lot of good decisions in them days, but that was a good decision. I got an education, right? As a policy analyst, environmental policy analyst. And then what happened was this low birth rate philosophy spread throughout the world to reduce the birth rate. Now, some people say that that is good. And, you know, Earth Day was about the same time, all happened about the same time as this, the first Earth Day. And nobody considered, or they considered the impact to the ecosystem of having too many people. But as we recall, economics also includes the ecosystem, all the natural resources, and human activity. One of the simplest definitions I've heard of economy is the system for the distribution of scarce resources. And where am I going with this? Where I'm going with this is no one ever considered the economic reality of it. Then in 79 or 80, China came out with the one-child policy because they were projected to have a ridiculous number of people eventually, right? In one generation, 2 billion, they would not have had the resources, in their opinion, to cover that. So what they ended up doing was creating one-child policy. And so the thing is, and then instituted a lot of daycare and other things of that nature to help the families. And then the other, so now both parents worked. And effectively, it doubled their economic output. And their balance books went up and their economy grew to catch up with this. Now, a couple of weeks ago also, we talked about the census, specifically the American Community Survey. The American Community Survey, along with 139 other surveys put out by the U.S. Census Bureau. Again, this is all under the Department of Commerce. It's all authorized by Congress, starting in 1800 with the first census. And if you go back into the debate about the census, they always intended on collecting this data. A lot of it, in my opinion, not necessary, and that we just got to stop recording because it's too damn divisive. I mean, if you can't ask those questions at work or polite society, why are we asking them in the U.S. Census? Real simple. That's my opinion on that. Stuff that probably should wither on the vine there, some of those questions. And now China, it's believed by most demographers, is way overestimating their population, perhaps by as much as 500 million. And this screws up the balance sheet also and causes manipulation. And a lot of our situations now with the tariffs and the other stuff that President Trump, right, has gotten a lot of criticism over. So what's my point? What is the point? What do I have a point here? Earth Day. So there were a lot of Earth Day proclamations today. We're going to share a couple of them. Whether I agree or disagree is irrelevant, but this is up in the, out there in the ether. We'll just leave it at that, out there in the ether. This is EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin.
From the mountains to the plains, the rivers and the oceans, across our nation's vast landscape, we all have a stake in our environment. This Earth Day, EPA is powering the Great American Comeback, energizing our economy as we carry out our mission of protecting human health and the environment. We remain committed to clean air, land, and water for all Americans. We can and we will accomplish this goal. Happy Earth Day.
All right, and this is from the White House today. Hold on. You just had it here. Do-do-do. Right, so why do I issue this stuff? Why? There's a lot of stuff in the news there. And what we're trying to do is with this, right? So here we have a statement from today from the White House. On Earth Day, we finally have a president who follows science. Under President Donald J. Trump, America is back, leveraging environmental policies rooted in reality to promote economic growth while maintaining the standards that have afforded Americans the cleanliest air and water in the world for generations. Unlike the previous administration, which wasted billions of taxpayer dollars on virtue signaling and ineffective grifts, the Trump administration, they found like $20 billion there. But the Trump administration's policies are rooted in the belief that Americans are the best stewards of our vast natural resources and no green scam required. Now this, we're going to go back to our friends. They've been on the program, James Taylor from the Heartland Institute, where they came up with this thing that people are the best way to manage, right? And through property rights, that's a libertarian thing, that through property rights, you are able to manage your resources better. And it's based on the principle that that lack of property rights leads to inefficient use. And furthermore, when you have this whole idea of inefficient use, so for example, nobody owns the air. Well, now you have to worry about regulation of that. How do you manage that? In the past, before all these environmental laws, in principle at least, if your air left your property, now you're trespassing, and therefore now you are have some legal recourse. The same thing with like ships. So what was faced around shipping, the shipping industry, where if you had a release from a factory and an impact of the shipping industry, now you had damage, right? Or the fishing industry, or you had fishing licenses, things that now you had standing to go, right? And litigated. And this was very ineffective. That's why they came out with a lot of these environmental laws, right? But the issue is that they don't always get enforced or enforced properly with this. That's always been my standard here, my thing here. So according to the administration, here are key actions President Trump is taking on the environment. President Trump is promoting energy innovation for a healthier future by supporting cutting edge technologies like carbon capture and storage, nuclear energy, and next generation geothermal. We covered press releases on carbon capture, where there's companies down in Texas doing this, got a permit recently approved for this. It's ensuring America leads in both energy production and environmental innovation, producing the cleanliest energy in the world. Moreover, by ending the Biden-era pause on liquefied natural gas export approvals, the U.S. is sharing cleaner energy with allies, reducing global emissions and creating American jobs. Building on President Trump's first term successes, where the U.S. led the world in greenhouse gas emission reductions. So we got out of the Green Deal. A lot of these new Green Deal things, right? And also the Paris Climate Accords and everything else, but they're still touting that we're doing greenhouse gas emission reductions here. So it sounds like we got a little bit of a conflict there that has to be explained here. President Trump is championing sound forest management. Again, this was in response to some of the wildfires and everything that we had most notably with the LA fires there and land use issues. President Trump is ending the forced use of paper straws. I don't know. First time I used a paper straw was in about 1975 or 76. I never had a problem with them. But now, as you get older, you know, you're not a man if you use a straw. Right? I fell into that stuff. Not only are paper straw mandates flawed in their alleged scientific backing, they're also bad for humans and the environment. According to a report, paper straws contain dangerous PFAS, aka forever chemicals. There's a link in here. Is from a report from the Domestic Policy Council from the White House. Right, and here, let's read a little bit of that. When Americans visit a coffee shop, and this is the executive summary here, very short here, I'll read the whole thing. Paper is a poor substitute for plastic when conveying a liquid. Scientific research corroborates common sense. Paper straws are not only an annoyance, but also a genuine risk to human health, public safety, and environment. Across nearly every relevant criteria, replacing plastic straws with paper alternatives is not justified. Tell you what, I should be sharing this here. Let me share this. It's amazing we have to have this in writing, right? Across nearly every relevant criterion, replacing plastic straws with paper alternatives, and let me adjust the camera again here, is not justified. Functionally, paper straws lack the structural integrity of their plastic alternatives. I could just hear Scotty, right, from Star Trek saying this. Captain, I'm giving it all she got for the structural integrity. We're losing structural integrity. But anyway, safety. They are hazardous to children and people with disabilities. Health. They contain PFAS chemicals linked to major health conditions. Equal protection. They unduly burden Americans with disabilities. By the way, with this, I will attest that that could be a problem. Now I have a bilateral cleft lip and cleft palate here, and I tell you what, back in my younger days, I mean younger days like a child, I did not I had a problem using straws without because of the anatomy of my mouth, right? Configuration of the mouth. So I can get that. Okay. According to a new report, not only are paper straws flawed and all bad for the humans environment, according to a new report, paper straws contain dangerous PFAS forever chemicals linked to significant long-term health conditions that infiltrate the water supply. Moreover, studies have found producing paper straws can have a larger carbon footprint and require more safety than plastic straws for approximately zero environmental impact. Right? President Trump is cutting wasteful regulations. Let me back up a little bit. Let me comment on this. So way back in the day, right, people say, how old are you? And I said, I'm old enough to remember how not using a paper bag, which I have right there to remind me, will save the environment because they have to cut down trees in the rainforest to make paper bags. So use a paper, plastic bag. They're biodegradable. Now we have the issue of microplastics all in the water supply, right? And enter the hydrologic cycle, and it's all over the place. Da-da-da. President Trump is cutting wasteful regulations that stifle innovation and raise costs. Actions like pausing restrictive emission rules for coal plants and revising the National Environmental Policy Act implementation have accelerated responsible energy and infrastructure projects while maintaining rigorous environmental standards, saving American families thousands annually on energy bills, and proving that a strong economy and a healthy environment go hand in hand. Well, I'll say this much. If you don't have money, you can't clean up the environment and the mess that you made before. President Trump is protecting public lands. The Trump administration has prioritized access to federal lands for energy development while ensuring responsible management. By opening more federal lands and waters for oil, gas, and critical mineral extraction, the U.S. is strengthening energy security and reducing reliance on foreign resources. Simultaneously, investments in conservation, such as a $38 billion in clean water infrastructure during President Trump's first term continue to safeguard America's heritage for future, natural heritage for future generations. President Trump is pushing back on unfair trade practices that harm the environment and undercut U.S. producers. For years, foreign countries have taken advantage of our generosity at the expense of American workers and the environment. Deforestation in Brazil is at a 15-year high. China's unfair, harmful fishing practices flood the global market with illegal fish, deplete stocks, and Mexico fails to deter illegal fishing while all enjoying massive trade deficits, with the U.S. continuing and contributing to global environmental degradation. I agree with that one on that, right? President Trump is cracking down on China, the most prolific polluter in the world. According to Reuters, China is responsible for the most ocean plastic pollution per year, with an estimated 2.4 million tons, around 30% of the global total, by imposing tough trade measures and promoting American manufacturing. The administration is reducing reliance on China's high pollution industries, ensuring the U.S. leads by example with cleaner production and responsible global stewardship. Okay. President Trump is protecting wildlife by pausing certain wind projects. Again, I'm going to tell you, there are wind projects that are out there going on because I did the safety training for them. 845-269-5772, and I can do your safety training. President Trump is recognizing wind turbines' detrimental environmental impact, particularly on wildlife, which often outweighs their benefits. And that's what we have from the White House on this. Let's see what else we got here. Right. So we started out on here. And I think that this is all a repeat of the executive order that we have had just now with that. So, again, you're not going to see, if you watch regular network TV and everything, you probably did not see that tonight. It's like, well, Jim, you told us that you don't watch TV. Yeah, I don't, but I can tell you what. The times I do, I mean, we did that demographic program. It ends up on a major network there. So we were the first. We're the first. They're listening to it. Believe me, they are listening because I was able to find out that. What else we got here? White House is from The Hill, article by Zach Burdick. This is from February 27th. Shortly after President Trump said EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin plans to cut 65% of the agency's staff, the White House clarified that Trump was referring to agency spending here. And in the past, I mean, in February, they found $20 billion, basically what we call the political arena, street money. Right, that was gave people money laundering, basically legalized money laundering with that. And, and the groove note hits the fan as usual. And what else we got here? Boom. All right, we're going to go to commercial break here. Oh. Yeah, we're not going to go to commercial break. We're going to talk right now. Friend of the program, right? He's tagged on almost every program we produce. And I spoke to him at length last week on this, right? A Safety in My Opinion by Jay Allen. He came out with this book. I tell you what, I'm thumbing through it where there's an audio edition. Right. This is the violent consciousness, construct, and the reality of risk. So let me read here. What if the system you're working in was never designed to hear the truth? That happens. Very rarely do you find an organization that is okay with the truth. They're out there. Believe me, they're out there, but they're very hard and difficult to find sometimes. Nobody wants to hear bad news. So what's the advantage of hearing bad news? Well, guess what? Now you could correct. Now it's reality. I spoke to a CEO of a major company, construction company, about a year ago. They love it when I give them their 8-hour Haswafa refresher training. The reason being that they love it so much is that I give the unvarnished truth with that. And they've gone to other companies. They haven't gotten the truth. They get a trainer out there. Let's face it. A lot of these consultants that do this in training stuff, right? What do they want? This is how you put on a hard hat. This is how you put on safety glasses. This is why you should be wearing this. I mean, they get into chemical hazards and baloney like that, which, yeah, it's important during a HAZWOP. But it's like, the permissible exposure limit of benzene is 1 parts per million, and it's dangerous. And, you know, you get shit like this and stuff that they'll never deal with. So the training has to be tailor-made. I'm going off on a tangent here. I'll get back to you in a minute, Jay. You know, so the training has to be relevant to what they're doing. So if you have managers that are getting training, give them management level training. This is how you manage these jobs. This is why this is important. Hard hat, safety. This is why it's important. 19-10-120. This is how you comply with the rules. This is how we do hands-on work. This is what you ask, right? Things of that nature. So you right. So you get data, so you're able to go and improve. So here we go. Safety, comma, in my opinion, isn't just about risk or rules. It's about signal. Jay Allen, PhD, takes you inside the rituals, the illusions, and the real human stories that shape how safety is seen, enforced, and ignored. I like seen, enforced, and ignored. That's good. Jay, you did great on that line, man. Right? From behavior-based safety to HOP, human organizational performance, which we freeze. From The Matrix to My Big Toe. Right? It was two books. From Burnout to Wake Up. This book isn't here to check boxes. It's here to crack them open. Another great line here. Something here resonates that's not an accent. It's a signal with that. Let me go over. I'm going to read off of Amazon.com. I cannot share that. Again, it's not our policy to share this stuff. This is the review. It's four things, right? All right. Do. All right, so this is going to be a trilogy here. With this is book one. Damn, Jay, you're good. Damn, I'm proud to be affiliated with you. What happens when awareness doesn't collapse the system? It mutates it. The Signal Transmission Trilogy explores how modern organizations respond to discomfort, not with truth, but with distortion. From simulation theory and human organizational performance to safety systems, performance optics, and language rebranding, these books dive deep into the unseen mechanics that shape behavior inside safety cultures and high-risk systems. Safety, in my opinion, was a wake-up signal. The moment that a safety professional stopped leaving the dashboard and started listening to the silence. The system didn't collapse as it adapted. The next transmission safety mutation is already pulsing behind the curtain, because the system always responds and never plays fair. These books don't offer compliance tips. They challenge the simulation itself. That's what we're here. That's what I would call the safety war. That is a war. It's a war for your safety. You're in it. You're fighting it every day. Right? With that. And safety, this is right off of Amazon here. This isn't a safety manual, it's a transmission. Safety, in my opinion, is not about checking boxes or enforcing rules. It's about waking up inside the system you're already part of. Jay Allen, PhD, takes you behind compliance to uncover the unspoken agreements, the emotional weight, and the cultural rituals that shape how people show up and why they stay silent. Blending safety leadership, systems thinking, simulation theory. Oh, we talked about simulation theory here. Are we part of a simulation? Yeah, you're damn right we are. And personal story, this book moves through the real cracks in the construct, moments where the map does not match the terrain. The rules don't reflect reality. From the fallout of a fatal crash on the 405 to discovering behavior-based safety and human organizational performance, the conversation with industry leaders, frontline workers, those carrying the quiet burnout. Tell you what, burnout, oh man, we know a lot about that. Jay Allen gives voice to the experiences most systems overlook. The book isn't here to impress, it's here to resonate. Whether you're a safety professional, systems thinker, or someone who simply knows there has to be a better way, safety, in my opinion, is your invitation to see differently, speak clearly, and lead with presence. Because real safety doesn't start with a rule, it starts with a signal. Five stars by three people here. Let's see with that. Profoundly real, right? This was on the reviewed on April 14th. That person probably got an advanced copy. We're all getting this. I tell you what. Jay Allen has done a lot for us. We got to, I tell you what, if you're on Safety FM, you're a host. My opinion, go out, talk this book up, right? Now, we owe it to the safety industry. You owe it to your organization. You owe it to Jay Allen, Safety FM, and everybody else in our listening group here. You owe it to them to go out there and promote the book, read the book. You know, we're going to be, I've read the first couple of chapters here, and it's very eye-opening. But if you're a regular listener to the Rated R Safety Show here on the Safety FM Network and the Jay Allen Show, where he does primarily interviews and he does Safety FM minis and his commentary with that. I tell you what, the Rated R Safety Show is a new show. And if you go back and listen to it, tune in like, because it's old news sometimes. Right, I mean, it's insightful, it's witty, it's all those things, very enjoyable. But usually about 27 to 35 minutes after the hour, he gets into his topic, and it's very insightful on there. And some of them come from the conversations that he has with me, I know. Some of them with the conversation with other people on the network and everything else. So go and check it out. I'm going to talk this book up the most I can here with this here. Try to get him on the show. All right. All right. I need a break here. I need to get something to drink. So, by the way, let's hear from Jay Allen himself. Is going to enforce new heat regulation starting on April 28th. The Nevada Division of Industrial Relations, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, Nevada OSHA, announced that the state's new heat regulation will be fully enforced starting on April 29th. This regulation aims to protect workers from heat-related illnesses. I'll tell you what, this hotel room, I'm going to get a heat-related illness in here, man. Wow, it's warm. The regulation aims to protect workers from heat-related illnesses as temperatures rise across Nevada. The regulation mandates that businesses with more than 10 employees conduct a job hazardous analysis to identify conditions that could lead to heat illness with that. So that's what's going on there. All right, what else we got here? So this was from last week. We're going to do a share screen here. With this, so OSHA has released its injury tracking ITA data. Let's do a share screen on that. This is what this looks like, injury tracking application. Pardon me, hiccups. ITA data. Establishment and case detail work-related injury and illness data. OSHA collects work-related injury and illness data from establishments that meet specific injury and employment site specifications through the injury tracking application. Certain establishments submitted summary data from the OSHA Form 300 since 2016. Beginning in 2024, some establishments were also required to submit certain case details from OSHA Forms 300 and 301. This page, let's remember that. I'm going to say this. That has to be like a running type of thing. You can't just do it at the end of the year, unless it's zero. But if you had injuries through the year, that you have basically 1 week after the injury to get that on the OSHA 300 log. And by the way, that's one of the things that they ask you during an OSHA audit. One of the first things, hello, I'm from the government and I am here to help. Hello, my name is, this is why we're here. Oh, and by the way, give us the OSHA 300 log. Usually like the fourth question there after the pleasantries are there. And you have to produce that within 4 hours. So if you're like some companies that have boatloads of this stuff, and now they only fill it out once a year, and it's like a relearning process every January to fill this out, you're not going to get it to them within 4 hours. And you know what? If they're there, well, let me tell you another secret. They usually have the data before they even show up. Well, what do you mean, Jim? Workers' comp, news reports. Maybe you had a fatality, you called it in. They have the data there. There's a good chance. And if, by the way, all of my understanding is that most municipalities, or pretty much all of them, are supposed to do this. But I haven't seen it in writing, but I know in certain areas, municipalities, every time there's a 911 or 911 call made, guess what? You're going to get a follow-up by OSHA. There's going to be an investigation with that. I know friend of the program, I can't say friend of the program. He died before the program. Very close friend of mine was an elected official. He was, I believe, an alderman or on the town council. But I'm not sure exactly the proper title. It was in New Hampshire. And what happened was he was killed at work in a horrible traffic accident. But guess what? Now, OSHA normally doesn't investigate traffic accidents unless it's in a work zone and a worker gets killed with a usually, I don't want to say never, but no, that's like pretty much their policy. However, when a public official dies in a workplace thing, other agencies call and, like that, like the feds. Right. So back to here, right? Detailed information about data collection process is available on the ITA webpage. Questions or concerns regarding the data can be submitted through the help request form. So you're able to go through this web site here on OSHA, and it gives you, all right, here we have the summary data here. What's it given to you? It's given it to me in a zip file, and it's in a CSV file that's very large, and it gives you a case detail file, also in another zip file. Here, and where is it? Where did it go? All right, so it is in. All right, so let me do another share screen here. So this is basically how it looks. So you can see how it's, written down there with everything. I tell you what, it goes on and on and on. How many lines do we have here? Lots. All right. So it gives it to you in a comma separated value format. It's 370,665 lines of data. Wow. Right. And that's on the summary thing, right? So, a lot of stuff there. A lot of stuff. So now they released that with that. And all right, what other day? Let me do share screen real quick on this. All right, So you go through the whole thing, work-related injury and illness in summary here for 2023, historical data here, going all the way back to 2016, and then summary date dictionary, whatever that, up back from 2016 to 2022. They have a nice little video here and other data sets. So if you are a, if you are a statistician, this is stuff. This is the severe injury reports. OSHA requires employers to report all work related severe injuries and is defined by amputation, in-person hospitalization, or loss of an eye. And with that, and that gives you other data also. Here we have, right? As of July 2024, right, that was fiscal year 2024, they had here total severe injury reports, 93,000, 76,295 hospitalized, and 24,834 with amputations. And this gives you other things. So we'll, you know what, we'll probably go through this here again. What kind of injury did that company have as a plumber? We could go in with that. So good data sets. I mean, it's out there with that. What else do we got here? All right. It's 48 after that. Let's see what else we have. So U.S. Department of Labor honors fallen workers with National Workers Memorial Day program on April 24th, 2025. And the department will welcome families traveling across the country to the nation's capital for the program, which pays tribute to men and women who have lost their lives while on the job, as well as all the fallen workers before them, the survivors who remain to grieve and carry on. So 15 people's lives a day. That's not exactly accurate, and we know that because according to their models, it's 50,000 workers die a year from workplace illnesses. That's not tracked by the 300 log. So with that, U.S. Secretary of Labor Lori Chavez de Remer, Acting OSHA Assistant Secretary Amanda Woodley-Howe, and Mine Safety and Health Administration Deputy Assistant Secretary for Policy James Paul McHugh will speak at this year's event. And the event will be live streamed starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. If they have a YouTube thing, I'll be sharing it with everybody. So, and there are events nationwide. Go on the website here. So, for example, I'm going to click on Pennsylvania, and they have one, two, three, four, five, three things, it looks like, on this week for that, and next week. So, something you probably want to go and learn about. So, with that, let's see. The Secretary of Labor meets with Teamsters, manufacturers, construction workers as America at Work and Tour continues. And let's see, we'll share a screen here also. Right. In her speech with Teamsters last year, let's say, the Secretary of Labor highlighted her father's experiences as a Teamster, meant paycheck we can count on, a roof over our heads, and a promise that hard work will be respected. My brother Wally was a Teamster for, I believe, 25 years with that. I worked with him for 3 summers in a warehouse where, you know, and who would have known those 3 years are critical because I do some warehouse safety. So it's not like I don't know what goes on in the warehouse with this stuff. Anyway, she went to Oregon and other places. Must be nice. And I think we shared this story one time, one other time here. I gotta open these things differently here. So I have to go through all these clicks to get stuff on screen. U.S. Department of Labor awards 1.5 mil to provide resources for forklift service members transitioning to civilian life. The U.S. Department of Labor today awarded 1.5 mil to health service members and their spouses transitioning from the military to civilian life. The funding will ensure impacted workers at and around Fort Bliss have uninterrupted access to needed resources, including employment and training services. I tell you what, and I'm not putting down veterans, but it's a culture shock for a lot of veterans to go into the regular workforce. And a lot of them become safety professionals because the government had, I don't know if they still have it, for to get safety credentials. So I know at least one person who went and the government paid for, he was a colonel in the military, paid for him to become, get involved in the safety business, got some education, got some credentials. And he had a pretty easy time transitioning to civilian life for the most part. But there are people who have issues transitioning there. I am not speaking as if I don't have experience in this. I was never in the military, but my brother, Wally, who was just in here, had, he transitioned from the Navy to civilian life. And a lot of his friends had issues because they didn't have a support network a lot of times. So for example, you're in the military, you leave home when you're 18, 19, 20, in that range, maybe a little older, and you leave home. Well, guess what? Now you've been all over the world. Now you come back, and it's kind of hard to relate to people. The other thing is this. You're in the military, and let's say you have some rank in there. You tell somebody to do something, they're gonna, unless you have a very good reason, right, you got to do it. Otherwise, you're in a big, deep guvno for doing that. And so when they come into civilian life, it's like, well, hey, look, the job is to do X, Y, and Z. Let's do it. And then civilians are like, well, no, we're doing it on our time. And then you have a problem. It's one such problem, that relating to other people, another issue. Right? You've been all, I have this issue. Anybody in the safety industry, like me, Jay Allen, Todd Conklin, and the industry my wife is in, event meeting planner, you get to meet a lot of people. One of the things that brought me and my wife together was that she did celebrity events for many years. I did politics for many years. And a lot of the same stories and, you know, things of that nature. We're able to relate because we met a lot of people, a lot of celebrities. With Jay and Todd and people like in this industry, what we do, safety industry, we meet all different kinds of people, especially if you've been in it for 20 or 30 years, you have many different experiences. It's very difficult sometimes to relate to the people in the field. And the same thing with veterans, right? They've been all over the world, right? It's kind of hard when you're in life and death situations as a veteran, fighting a battle or in high stress situations, now you kind of deal with people who've never had that experience. How do you make that transition? It does matter. And that's why we have programs like this one that we just talked about. A lot of companies are encouraged to hire veterans to get them back into the workforce, preferably with some relevant experience from the military, the green to your workforce. And I tell you what, every fantastic leader that I've had in my life here, half of them were military members, right? I had a lot of good teachers, but one that stands out in my life the most was my 10th and 12th grade English teacher, Dr. Nelson from St. Joseph's Metuchen. He eventually went to Princeton and now he's retired. Robert Nelson, phenomenal teacher. He was an officer in the Marines and very effective, very good thing. And he very disciplined. I'm going to say that. He didn't mess around in his classes, but very effective, right, with it. And I could only hope
to be as effective as he was as a college professor for a short time. So, that's what I have here. We're going to be closing safety words for the evening here. God willing, I'll be back tomorrow. Some stuff from the EPA here. Right? So, Lee Zeldin, we heard that. So, EPA enforcement actions in 10 California facilities are addressing chemical accidents here. Fines of over $170,000. Reducing risk from accidental releases of toxic substances is a core responsibility for the EPA, said EPA Pacific Southwest Regional Administrator Josh F.W. Cook. With that, and names the companies and some of the stuff that they did. Again, my opinion, they went a little bit too far with climate change. They got to really concentrate on really tangible things like environmental cleanups, stuff like this other thing where they're cleaning up brownfield jobs. EPA Regional Administrator helps usher in a new chapter for brownfield job training grads in Rochester, New York. With that, 16 graduates accepted their diplomas and met with prospective employers from a EPA brownfields situation here. So what is it? The program is a tuition-free, comprehensive, multi-partner initiative designed to connect dislocated workers and unemployed individuals with long-term sustainable careers in the construction environmental remediation fields. So check out some of those folks if you can. With that, there's right up there on the EPA website here with this. And just since 1998, EPA has awarded 371 brownfields job training grants. These grants, over 15,000 individuals have been placed in careers related to land remediation, environmental health, and safety. So I imagine that's a lot of 1910-120 training. Along with some other stuff too. So, it's good, right? Everything's good. And let's see, how many more minutes do we have here on the air? So, we're just going to end it right here and, have a great night. I will, God willing, be here, tomorrow for Safety Wars. This is Jim Pulsel signing off.